You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
For the chalice lighting today are by Ellen Hamilton. In faith together we light this small scrap of light, symbol of the sun's enormous power, whose energy burns so brightly in these days of deep summer, catapulting the leaves and vines, vegetables, flowers and fruits to astonishing size, lengths and heights, spilling the tops of cages, walls and trellises, delighting and nourishing all beings. We bask in the warmth and heat of these days with lightened hearts and quickened senses, in gratitude and in faith. Unitarian House is on Kaurna lands. We acknowledge the custodianship of the Kaurna people and honour their elders. It's pleasing to note that our national anthem no longer inadvertently excludes them by referring to Australia as a young land. We are now one and free. Welcome to our service of worship. My name's Jenny Dyster, and yes, you did see me here last week. Next month, we will see some new faces leading the service. We face our first year for a decade without a full or a part-time minister. The search committee is operational, and we have a few promising leads, mostly for later on rather than right now. The Unitarian Church is perhaps best described as creedless and post-Christian. That's not to say Christians are turned away. Muslim, Buddhist, Christians, Baha'i and any other people who've become dissatisfied with the more conservative manifestations of their own traditions will find a practice here where no one will tell you what to believe or how to practice. We are a spiritual community that encourages and supports all who come to find, to form and to fashion their own spiritual path. Any path that helps you see more clearly, love more abundantly, and work toward a better world for all. Here at Unitarian House, we light candles to express joys or concerns or moments of spiritual insight. As always, please be brief and don't comment on anyone else's contribution. The time for comments and questions and details is after the service when you're free to converse. You're welcome to light a candle in silence. If you choose not to share, you can still take part in widening this circle of compassion by listening with an open heart and mind and refraining from comment. I open our worship space for this sacred act that draws us together in our shared humanity and will light the first candle. The final candle represents those things we've chosen not to share that remain silent in our hearts. May all the things we've shared be honoured by this beloved community.
Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate. Rough winds do shake the darling buds of May, and summer's lease hath all too short a date. Sometime too hot the eye of heaven shines, and often is his gold complexion dim. And every fair, from fair, sometime declines by chance, or nature's changing course untrimmed. But thy eternal sun shall not fade, nor lose possession of that fair thou owest. Nor shall death brag thou wanderest in his shade, when in eternal lines to time thou growest. So long as men can breathe or eyes can see, so long lives this, and this gives life to thee.
Thanks, Bob. I remember Judy Dench said Shakespeare was so easy to learn, and it's because of the rhythm. It's just gorgeous, isn't it, the iambic pentameter. Zum ristacumadin, ludus in cuckoo, groweth seed and bloweth mead and springeth wood anew, sing cuckoo. Ewes are bleaten after lambs and loweth calf and coo, bullock starteth buck to bear verteth, sing cuckoo, alice sing cuckoo, and a cease the never knew. That is one of the oldest songs on record, and we sing it in terrace singers in about six parts. It's not such a good idea to be bleating after lambs or lowing after calves in Australia. Is this our stereotypic picture of summer? I hope not. Sunglasses, sand, and surfing are very appealing, but they're not the whole story. My father, who dreaded bushfires, having experienced the Ash Wednesday conflagrations in the 80s when living in Aldgate, was no more at ease about the prospect of summer when he and Mum shifted to Wistow. My mother was impatient with him. She'd grown up in Tasmania, where the fuel load is heavier. One of her earliest memories was being installed inside with George and Vern, watching through the windows of their timber-framed cottage as her five oldest siblings drenched the house yard, diving on fallen embers with wet hessian bags. Grandma and Pop had gone to market in New Norfolk with berries, and you could imagine their trepidation as they made their way back up the burned slopes of Mount Dromedary to the family home. Anyway, Mum, throughout the rest of her days, was not especially perturbed by extreme fire danger days. And of course, it's not just fires in an Australian summer. We have droughts and flooding rains too. Why so many contradictory pictures? Now I'm going to get ecclesiastical. El Niño and La Niña. El Niño means little boy, or Christ child in Spanish. On the other side of the Pacific, this term began to refer to matters meteorological. As early as the 1600s, fishermen noticed very warm water in the Pacific, especially around Christmas, coinciding with cooler, wetter season. On our side of the Pacific, we have drought and heat in El Niño years. La Niña is the opposite. When water temperatures get lower near South America, they get fewer hurricanes and our east coast gets a hammering. Oddly enough, so does the Atlantic. Talk about a practical demonstration of our seventh principle that we live in an interconnected world. With our La Niña event now well underway in Australia, we're looking at above average rainfall for many parts of the continent, bringing greater risk of flooding. In December, rainfall did intensify down the east coast. Fast-moving grass fires are a risk in some areas, especially west of the Great Divide, as new growth dries out in the warmer weather. La Niña means little girl in Spanish. La Niña and El Niño are not separate events. We are currently in the La Niña phase of the El Niño Southern Oscillation, ENSO. Apart from that, there are other climate drivers at play. Indian Ocean Dipole, the Southern Annular Mode, the Madden-Julian Oscillation, and I think I should probably quit while I'm only slightly behind. What remains is to be said is that these systems are global and predictable. Our scientists announced the current phase back in September. We need to respect the interdependent web of all existence, of which we're part. It has an effect on power consumption and transport, and it should have an effect on how we build and operate our houses, private and association, and public buildings. They're still being built with scant regard to alignment, ventilation, and even insulation. The patterns are complex. The northern and eastern central parts of our country will have more cyclones and rain. There are cooler daytime temperatures south of the tropics, though. Maximum temperatures are likely to be above average for Tasmania, Victoria, and the far west. Minimum temperatures are very likely to be above average across much of Australia. No wonder we can't get a real handle on summer. Now, I've made an odd discovery about summer. If you look up poetry, you will find buckets of autumn poems. Poets couldn't get enough mellow fruitfulness. The next most popular is spring. Spring has sprung, the grass is riz. I wonder where the boydies is. The boyd is on the wing, but that's absoid. From what I've heard, the wing is on the boyd. That's the Brooklyn anthem. Hopkins, Blake, Wordsworth, Houseman all wrote movingly on spring, its inspiration, its spiritual significance. There are fabulous winter poems by Robert Frost and the wonderful William Müller, who wrote the lyrics of Schubert's Wintergeise, that's the winter journey song cycle. But there's no equivalent for summer. People seem to latch onto the abstract or symbolic meanings for spring, that's new growth, autumn, that's harvest and slowing down, taking stock, and winter links up with hibernation and hardship. But summer? No, there's a lack of poetry. Part of the key to this puzzle lies in the sonnet Bob Brummett read you. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Well, no way, apparently. Thou art too lovely and more temperate. The poem begins with the speaker suggesting a series of similes to describe the young man, and in each case he quickly reasons why the simile is inappropriate. If he compares the young man to a summer's day, he has to admit the metaphor fails to capture the young man's full beauty. He's more lovely and more temperate. As the poem proceeds, the poet's objections begin to shift. The young man's beauty exceeds whatever he's compared to. Then the poet notices a dark underside to his own similes. They suggest impermanence and decay. To compare the young man to the summer implies that autumn is coming. To compare him to the sun implies that night may fall soon. Not done yet, he moves to a more ambitious assertion. The poem itself will give eternal life to the young man. So long lives this, and this gives life to thee. The poem's argument is circular. The young man isn't like a summer's day or the sun because his beauty is eternal. The point is, though, summer itself gets the brush off for roughness, unreliability, and impermanence. Is this fair? Is it even accurate? People look forward to summer tremendously. Being lazy, going on camp, going to the beach. Summer in America is iconic. I had a picture of Maren Alsop, who's currently the director and conductor of the Vienna Radio Philharmonic. And there was a summer story that I rather liked of hers. She was born to two musician parents and at the age of two started the piano. By the age of 6, she was over the piano. She loathed it, and she screamed for an hour or so in order to avoid practice, and her parents decided that maybe it was time to give up the ambitions for the piano. And they asked her, would you like to go to summer camp? Well, yes, of course she would. It's iconic in America. She had idea of horse riding and skating and all sorts of fun, so she said yes. Well, you have to go on your own. They were going off on tour. And of course, she was a big girl now, 7, so she got on the train. And at the station, they handed her a violin and said, oh, by the way, you might have to practice the violin. Well, it turned out she was actually being dispatched to string players' boot camp. As soon as she arrived, she was informed that she'd have to practice from 8 a.m. in the morning to 1 each day, and then they could have their summer fun. Admittedly, they couldn't do all those fabulous sports. The only sport they were allowed to do was ping pong, because you mustn't hurt your hands. And to this day, she's a dab hand at ping pong, apparently. So the tactic was successful, because at age 8, when she went for the audition at the Juilliard, she got into the pre-college course. But the point is, that theme comes back of being disappointed, having this expectation and having things turn out rather differently. Of course, the English idea of summer, jokes about summer don't stop. You might recognise those two, Flanders and Swan, in their weather song, June just rains and never stops, 30 days and spoils the crops. In July the sun is hot, Flanders. Is it shining? Swan. No, it's not. Both. August, cold and dank and wet, brings more rain than any yet. In Australia, we probably do even better for roughness, unreliability and impermanence. But is there any reason to neglect summer as an object of meditation, as a source of spiritual inspiration, of symbol, meaning, challenge and purpose? All those things are important. Impermanence, roughness, unreliability, it's the stuff of life, isn't it? And I'm going to finish up with a bit of Ecclesiastes. Just a reminder about the Bible, it doesn't say what should be, it says kind of more what is. To everything there is a season, and a time to every purpose under the heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck that which is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones together. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to get and a time to lose. A time to keep. A time to give away. A time to rend and a time to mend. A time of silence and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time of war and a time of peace. The benediction is by Maureen Killoran. As we listen to the blessing of music, may we know this ending as more than a time of goodbye. May the warmth of this community and the memory of our chalice flame sustain our hearts and encourage our minds as we engage the blessings of life's challenges and joys. The service has ended. Your service has begun. Go in peace. Go in joy. Go in love.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.